I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. There's plenty to taste, sip, and savor this holiday season right here in Florida. It's much more than just a seafood or citrus state. Florida's farmers specialize in a cornucopia of sugarcane, sweet corn, tomatoes, strawberries, blueberries, watermelons, cattle, exotic tropical fruits that don't grow anywhere else in the nation. And that's according to the authors of the new book, Field to Feast. It's a recipe book celebrating the state's farmers and chefs. They'll join me to discuss the best food that Florida has to offer. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by the authors of the new book, Field to Feast, Recipes Celebrating Florida Farmers, Chefs, and Artisans. With me in the studio is Pam Brandon. She's a food and travel author and the managing editor of Edible Orlando magazine. Pam, great to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
Katie Farmand is a food stylist and recipe developer. She's also editor of Edible Orlando magazine. Katie, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
And joining us by phone from the offices of the Orlando Sentinel, Heather McPherson, who's food editor, restaurant critic for the Orlando Sentinel. And we were hoping to have you with us, but, you know, being a newspaper journalist, deadlines get moved around, and we're happy you can have you on the phone.
Thank you so much for patching me in.
Great to have you. So, you know, different parts of the U.S. are known for regional specialties. New England has seafood, the Southwest has kind of a Latin flair, the South known for classics like soul food. But even 90.7's restaurant critic Scott Joseph says there's no such thing as a Florida cuisine, unless maybe you count Cuban food or Puerto Rican. So I just wanted to throw that question out. Do you guys define, is there a Florida cuisine, Pam Brandon?
We think it's a great melting pot. And writing the book, researching the book, we found an amazing diversity. There's probably no other state in the U.S. that has the diversity, from tropical fruits down in South Florida to peanuts and pecans and olive trees in North Florida. So it's really a diverse melting pot of all sorts of cuisines.
Heather McPherson, is there a Florida cuisine?
I think that there is. I think it's unique. I think it's a little bit of Dixiana with a little bit more of diversity. We are surrounded by these lovely bodies of water, so we've welcomed newcomers since the Spanish first came to Florida shores, and all of that is still reflective in our culinary heritage. I say yes, there is a Florida cuisine. We are not a southern cuisine, so to speak. We are a wonderful, to use Pam's word, you know, a melting pot of all of these different visitors who've come, stayed, and enriched the land that's Florida.
Well, Katie, what do you think about this?
I would have to agree. I think it's just a little bit of everything. There's nothing that's a truly, strictly Florida dish, but we can kind of claim all kinds of different dishes and types of food as our own because there are so many different diverse cultures and people and crops and all kinds of things here.
There are other states, though, in this geographical region that seem to have a stronger food imprint. You know, you think of something like Louisiana, you think crawdads and kind of that Cajun food. Does Florida have an outside for people looking in at the state? Is there a recognized typecast of foods?
Well, citrus, of course, is the one we all think of, and strawberries. And I think tropicals from South Florida. But I think we really are learning about so many new crops that are grown in Florida. And that was the greatest thing about the book. We found so much beyond citrus and strawberries and, you know, potatoes.
And you really did go around the state. Talk about some of the places that you went, Heather.
Well, we divided and conquered. You know, with three people doing the book, we were able to do that. I took Central Florida. Our lines were a little gray, how we drew them. If we found a place that sort of bordered on the other one's region. Pam was in South Florida. Katie was in North Florida. And we set out to talk to local farmers, local chefs. We found these farmers through other farmers. We just set out as three reporters would, hit the dirt, so to speak, and the asphalt, traveled thousands of miles, and came up with nearly 100 of food artisans in the state of Florida who have what we think are best practices. This isn't necessarily a slow food book or an organic book. It's a story about farmers who have a passion for the Florida soil. It means something to them. Whether they're a 12-generation cattle ranch or they're someone just farming, such as T, one of Pam's farmers down in South Florida, who are farming just a very small part of an inner city area. People are feeding the world and they're feeding their communities.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that northern region, Katie Farman. I saw there was a farm that was visited up in Quincy, and I used to be up in Tallahassee, so I know Quincy well, known as a really great farming region. What did you find up there?
Well, the farm in Quincy is really cool. It used to be kitty litter clay mine, I guess, for lack of a better word. They used to dig up the clay there use it for kitty litter. And the girl bought the land from her family and now farms it. And she's in her early 30s or late 20s. She's really young and she's doing great things. And it is all organic, and it's all small batch, and it's run by a CSA, supported by a CSA.
Tell us about a CSA. What is that?
CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it's a way for community members to directly support the farms. Instead of the farmers taking their products to a farmer's market or to a grocery store, they give it directly to the consumer, and the consumers will either buy a box for the season, so they just get what's best, or sometimes they'll open up their farms and let it kind of run more as a market. But in general, it is just you get the box of what's the best that week.
And what are they growing up there in the northern part of the panhandle there?
I found a lot of really just kind of the traditional crops, lettuces and broccoli and things like that. But then there are there's an olive grove up in the panhandle that was really remarkable. There's a potato farm in Hastings near Jacksonville. There's peanuts up in, again, up in the panhandle. So there's a lot of really interesting things that you might not know grow in Florida, but they do, and we found them.
Well, Pam Brandon, you were down in South Florida. What kind of stuff did you find growing down there, and what excited you about it?
Again, almost everything grows in South Florida. There's a lot of corn. I mean, the wintertime, Florida corn crops feed a lot of the country. There's a lot of tomatoes, a lot of tropicals. And we found also the smaller farms that had really growing a lot of microgreens, hydroponics. There's just a lot of experimental farming going on in Florida, too, by these young farmers. So you've got everything from the big guys, from dairy to corn, and then you've got brand new families that are farming a lot of hydroponics.
I think it's interesting that you say there's a lot of young people doing this. I think there's a mindset that just thinks, well, agriculture is dying out. It's older generations doing it. But I've heard two of you now say youthful people involved in farming. Talk to me about that. It's not just what you might envision.
Exactly. There's a great Central Florida example in Blue Bayou in Yalaha, Florida, which is in Lake County. The family there, the McCormicks, were in the landscape business for many years. And there's something happens when you have children. You think about what's going into their mouths. I think people change the focus of how they grow things. The McCormick family got into organic blueberries and now have branched out into some wonderful hydroponics. And their young daughters, who are featured in the book, we have their grandmother's blueberry pie in there. The girls helped make the crust for the pie the day we were out there shooting. We're so proud to hold it up. And these girls will carry on that legacy, too. And these aren't the typical 12-generation, I mentioned cattle ranches or other people who have been, the Duda family, have been in vegetables for years and years. These are relatively new generations coming forward and deciding that this is the lifestyle they love. This is something that they want to do. And it's wonderful. I mean, agriculture in Florida is a $1 billion business. People have to eat. And there is a way to be involved in that process to make sure people are getting the best food to their tables.
Well, talk to me. Explain that a little bit more, Heather McPherson, because so many people hear that agriculture is such a hard life, and it's just interesting to me to hear that so many young people tackling on what can be a very challenging profession.
It is a hard life, but you know, there's so much art in it. It's that joy in watching things come to fruition. A lot of what's really helped are the chefs all across the country, and especially in the state of Florida, where farmers are actually putting the names of farms on their menus. What a source of pride that is when someone opens up a menu from, say, the Ravenous Pig in Winter Park, or its new sister restaurant, the Cask and Larder, or Luma on Park, even out at Disney at Victoria and Albert's, and they see Lake Meadow Natural Eggs on that menu, that you're proud of what you've done. That's just, you know, a wonderful thing that you may not get in a everyday job where you're working with widgets, you know, or whatever. I mean, you're helping feed the world. You're also, your work, your hard work is on a 4-star menu.
And that's something to be proud of for sure. Now, I did see in the book, which, by the way, is beautiful, full, you know, color pages, and really the food looks quite scrumptious in this book, I got to say. But I did see that someone went out to the Light Sea Ranch, which is not far from here in Lake Wales. Who did that?
I did that.
Heather, you did that. Now, tell me about this, because I've actually been out to the Light Sea Ranch. I've been out there at Lake Kissimmee. Fascinating to see old-style cracker cattle ranching still alive and well here in Central Florida.
Still alive and well. The Light Seas are a great example of those best practices. The Light Seas were one of the very first ranchers who invited the Sierra Club environmentalists onto their land and said, listen, we all want the same thing. We need clean water. We need great soil for our cattle to be happy. And invited people to come on. There are 12 active eagle nests on their Brahma Island.
Tons of bald eagles out there.
Yes. And so this is a multi-generational farm that is thinking about the next generation. Listening to their, we found that the farms that really prospered, that had been in business for several generations, are the ones that when their children went off to ag school and came home, they really listened. They realized how they could go forward with better practices, and that's really happening there. One interesting thing about the food, we think we have the beef tangerine stir fry that goes with the Light Seas, or either of those fabulous tacos in the book. But I spent a day with largely the women in the Light Sea family doing some menu planning, and we kind of think maybe we have a stereotypical idea of what ranch hands would eat all day. These are athletes, and a lot of them are riding rodeo, and they were in training. And so there was a lot of talk about lean proteins and low fat, maybe not the way that most of us would think of the chow station or when everyone stops for a meal after a day of dealing with cattle all day.
Well, and that cracker cattle, that's a beef cattle, right? There's certain types of, I learned this when I went out, there's certain types of cattle. They're not all for beef, but cracker cattle are.
Actually, I think what you're referring to is a fascinating part of Florida history. The state of Florida gave birth to the nation's entire beef industry, and most people don't know that. When the Spanish came and landed on the Atlantic shore, they had boats with cattle basically tied up in muslin cloth. You don't even want to imagine the stench of what that was. And when they came to Florida, they brought this cattle. The whole gaucho cowboy culture began here in Florida. So when the Indians overtook some of the settlers, some of that cattle was dispersed into the scrub. And that became Florida's cracker cattle line. And there are people who have antique herds. They're actually antique herds of cattle. You won't see those at your local antique shop. But they are very prized because they speak of Florida's rich history in the beef industry. Those aren't the ones that are going to market. There are other breeds that are going to market, but they are an important part of Florida's agricultural history.
Now, a couple pages in the book also dedicated to endangered foods in Florida, among them wild Gulf Coast shrimp. Why are shrimp in danger of becoming extinct? Katie?
I think the convenience of farming, because the sort of the demand was outpacing the supply. So the kind of practice of wild shrimp farming has kind of gone away. It takes more time to be out on the shrimp boats and it's just cheaper and easier to get shrimp from farm. So I think I'm not very well versed on shrimp farming, but I think that that's the main reason. It's just farm shrimp is...
Big restaurants are buying it from overseas rather than from Florida, too. So it's expensive.
Right. Is it more expensive to get shrimp from Florida than the overseas ones, even though they're farther away?
Right. But I also want to, and this is Heather, I'd like to interject too, is that the Royal Reds, which are the Florida shrimp that are really prized right now, were often neglected as a trash shrimp. Nobody really wanted them.
Tell us that name again.
Royal Reds.
Royal Reds.
They're fabulous. And for a long time, you know, we were buying all of this overseas shrimp and what have you, and we had this wonderful product that was largely being overlooked. It's, you know, it's deep water. It's really wonderful and flavorful. It's huge and just juicy and does so great in recipes. Again, chefs started using it. The people at Wild Ocean Seafood over in Brevard County are the ones who bring this in. They do a wonderful job of it. They are really a best practices fishery that they have. They also are the source of Florida's most famous shrimp, the rock shrimp, which is purely a Florida shrimp. And for years, it was thrown away as trash because no one could figure out how to get that lobster shell off the back of it. And Rodney Thompson, who the patriarch of the family, devised a machine and found out how to snip off in bulk that wonderful shell. And rock shrimp is this, it's like a cross between lobster and shrimp. It's just wonderful and sweet. And the Royal Reds were just a little bit difficult to get to. So we now have Wild Oceans and you know, giving us two wonderful prize shrimp.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with the authors of Field to Feast Recipes, celebrating Florida farmers, chefs, and artisans. Pam Brandon and Katie Farmand are editors at Edible Orlando Magazine. They're here in studio. Heather McPherson, food editor at the Orlando Sentinel, joining us by phone. I'm Mark Simpson. What are your favorite Florida foods? Tell us about it online, Facebook, and Twitter. Send us an email, if you like, intersection@WMFE.org. Pam, Brandon, you focused on the southern part of the state, and I'm thinking you've got to have come across a good stretch of ocean types foods down there. But what do you think in terms of South Florida and the types of produce? Is it necessarily all coming from the sea, or are you looking at more agriculture as well?
There's so much produce in South Florida. Palm Beach County is the largest farming county in all of Florida. And by the way, we have a seafood book coming up next. So we focused on produce in this one because there were so many great seafood stories. I think in South Florida, probably one of my favorite crops were the tomatoes. There are amazing tomatoes coming out of South Florida from Homestead all the way up to Palm Beach County. And the tropicals, which you can't get anywhere else in the state, were among the favorites. Lots of microgreens.
I see that now. I'd never heard that term until recently. I was out at a local eatery. It was a burger with microgreens on it.
Big business in restaurants today, and certainly Swank Farms down in Palm Beach County. This is a guy who was an electrician up in the Northeast. His wife's from Brooklyn. He was at Epcot and saw hydroponic farming at the land and completely changed his life, moved his family to Palm Beach County. They have three beautiful young children. They live on the farm, and he does an entire crop of hydroponic microgreens and hydroponic tomatoes.
You know, what I hear from you is it's so much more than just the food products itself. It's the people, those amazing stories. Katie, what are some of the amazing stories you encountered going across the northern part?
Well, that really is kind of what we're most proud of in this book. We love the recipes, and we think that they're fantastic, and that's why we started this book, but the stories were kind of what we were the most proud to find out. And one of my favorite stories is actually from Paisley Pecans, and I brought some of the
I'm eyeing them
in the book
jealously for our listeners.
You can have one if you'd like.
Wow.
This was a man who planted pecans years ago because that was what was recommended to him because there were no pecan farms. And he did, and it was a great flourishing farm. And then one day it just became too much. And he tearfully told his son, I'm going to have to sell the farm because I just can't handle it. So his son, who lived in Michigan, would fly down on weekends to help his dad run the farm. And his father has since passed away, but he moved down to Florida with his wife, and they now run the farm 6 months out of the year, and the other 6 months, I think, is somebody else. But that was just one of those things that's just really remarkable. And another one was the Smith family in Hastings. They are four or five generations of one farming family all living on the same farm. Started as a potato farm about 100 years ago. And now the great-great-grandson of the original farmer lives on the farm with his children and his brother and his father and I believe his grandfather as well. They all still live and work on the farm. They've diversified since and they grow more than potatoes. But that is a true example of a family who has stayed true to their roots and have been great stewards of the land.
You did. You mentioned you brought these pecans and they're covered chocolate.
They're pecan pralines with bittersweet chocolate and a little bit of selgri, which is gray sea salt. Sure, I'll
have one with me. Don't make me.
I ate them as I was making them, but I'll have another one.
All right. So wait. So you made these?
I did.
So tell us about it.
This is one of the recipes from the book, and it's a really easy to make pecan praline, and it's got a little bit of dark chocolate and a little bit of sea salt on the top to kind of offset the super sweetness of the.
What
of
is the sugar around this? This is like eating a maple sugar candy.
Exactly. It's brown sugar, butter, and cream.
Oh my goodness.
And pecans.
Nothing bad.
Yes. All good whole foods right there.
No calories.
I just saw my doctor today, so. My goodness, that is so rich and very delicious.
And I brought some guacamole to go on the savory side. So we've got a little bit of guacamole from South Florida.
We'll have to try that in just a moment. Let's talk now about planning maybe a post-Thanksgiving meal or maybe you're ramping up for another holiday meal with different ingredients, different recipes that you might recommend out of the book. Talk to us a little bit about in Florida, Heather, it can be maybe a challenge to create that holiday sense since the seasons don't change that much, although we've got a little nip in the air. But how do you mark the occasions through food from this state?
Well, actually, it's very easy to do right here in Central Florida. There's a wonderful place called Crazy Heart Ranch. They're over in Felsmere. And they have heritage breed turkeys, wonderful, wonderful turkeys that are free range. We have an herb brine turkey breast in the book, too, to help you get that onto the table. And I love the founders of this farm. One started out as a surgical nurse studying in Texas, came here really to Florida with an internship and fell in love with veterinary science and then ended up starting this farm. So we have all kinds of wonderful stories about people like that who were basically following other dreams and ended up doing just that. You know, this is also the time of year when people here try to send a taste of Florida elsewhere. And Uncle Matt's Organics comes to mind. Uncle Matt's a great story. There's actually an Uncle Matt. It's Matt McLean. And he swore to me the first time I ever met him that he was never, ever going to go into the citrus business. His family's done it for six generations and was so hard work and getting eaten by mosquitoes and all of that sort of thing. And so he decided that, you know, he was going to go to ag school but do something different in the business. Well, Uncle Matt's Organics is probably one of the biggest success stories in citrus right now. You see their juices on the stores at Whole Foods and Publix. And Uncle Matt's is also getting into another area of agriculture that I think Floridians should really watch, and that's peaches. We do have a peach grower in Lakeland, Florida called Neat and Sweet Peaches, which are doing really wonderful. But Matt has designated several acres in Lake County, Florida, for peach development. And many of us who watch food a lot have watched what South Carolina has taken a pretty decent bite out of the Georgia peach market. And we're hoping Florida gets to do that, too.
Interesting. Well, walk us through, if you can, in combination here, ladies, what is a good setup of maybe a meal? Can you walk us through maybe starters through main courses? What do you start with here that's maybe a good example, a recipe out of the book?
We just turned to the page with the boiled peanuts, which is one of my favorite recipes in the book. There's nothing like fresh boiled peanuts, and the recipe in the book is one of the very, very best. And we have some great cocktail recipes. We have a siesta key lime martini. We have an Umatilla smash made with Palm Ridge whiskey. We have all sorts of wonderful, wonderful a guacamole I brought today for you from Margie Pekarsky's farm down, Bee Heaven Farm down in Homestead. It's her very special guacamole
recipe.
It
looks delicious and chunky.
Yes, she likes it chunky.
Mark, I do want to hopefully when people get to the back of the book and see all the – we actually guide people to all the farms.
Mm-hmm.
But Katie did a wonderful job of creating these – Florida menus, and we do have Holidays Florida style in there. Mm-hmm. It starts with a creamy wild mushroom soup. We have that Crazy Heart herb butter basted turkey and a spicy sweet kale to die for. And you can serve that with purple cabbage and goat cheese saute, mushroom medley potato cakes, which were from a farm, Monterey Mushrooms, which are right here in Central Florida. And then we're going to finish your meal off with, this is so over the top, I had to test this recipe 3 times, not because it needed to, I wanted to, the chocolate chestnut torte with a ganache glaze. And those are chestnuts from Alachua County.
Wow, my mouth is watering just hearing about all of this. Is it hard to make, Katie? What do you say?
No, we really felt strongly about a cookbook that people would be able to use. So all of the recipes were tested in home kitchens. We made sure that all of the recipes work and that they're easy to do and that the ingredients are easy to find. And if they're a little bit more difficult to find, we give substitution. So we really felt like this was going to be a book that people could use and read and have fun with, but also really cook from.
Heather, what's the most amazing thing you discovered during this journey, writing this book and traveling all these places?
I think for me, people have this idea of what Florida is, from theme parks to resorts and what have you. But when you're driving down the I-4 corridor, on the other side of the tree line are wonderful farms, wonderful places that are just on the other side of the river, places that you can't see, but they're right in your own backyard. And that, to me, was a great discovery, how rich Central Florida is, right in my backyard. This book could have been 4 times as large as it was. It was very hard to choose the ones that actually made the book. But we would love to have a second edition that was twice as big.
Pam, what did you discover on this journey?
I think we went in search of recipes, and instead we found these amazing stories of people who are humble, hardworking, but so, so smart, really intelligent, hardworking. I mean, this is a 24/7 job. And when you think about the fact that you go and sit in a restaurant or you go to a grocery store and buy produce, the time they took to get it either to the grocery store or to a restaurant kitchen or to your own kitchen, that for me was the biggest discovery of all and the biggest appreciation of all.
Katie, how about for you?
Well, kind of I have a two-part answer. The first, the discovery that I think I was most surprised by was the olive grove in the Panhandle.
That's so fascinating. I would think you need warmer weather, but
you would think so. And but the guy who started it, he retired to the Panhandle, and he fell in love with olive trees after working in Europe for a lot of years. And he thought, well, there was enough similarities in the weather, he was just going to try it. So he started with 5 or 6 trees, and it took several years to get them to fruit and be enough that he could start selling them. So he planted the trees that worked, and now he is bottling olive oil and selling brined olives. And I just thought that was really cool. And it was very one of those stories that goes to show somebody who just has a real passion for this. And he wasn't going to give up until he found an olive tree that could work in Florida. So that was really cool. And also one of the things that I just was most pleased by was the relationships that we kind of developed with some of these farmers. Most of these farmers, they're just kind people who would invite us into their homes. One of the farmers made my husband and me breakfast. She fried up some duck eggs and gave us homemade preserves and bread that she had just baked. And that kind of thing was really just this heartwarming other side. You see, you know, farms, and they just, you don't know what's behind them in the stories that are there. So
fascinating. I think you really hit on something there, that it's not that far away. In Florida, you always find that. You can drive just a little bit, and there's always something amazing around the horizon. We've been speaking with the authors of the new book, Field to Feast, Recipes Celebrating Florida Farmers, Chefs, and Artisans. Pam Brandon, managing editor at Edible Orlando Magazine, and Katie Farmand, editor at Edible Orlando Magazine, with us in the studio. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thanks. Thank you. It was so fun.
And joining us by phone, the very busy Heather McPherson, food editor, restaurant critic at the Orlando Sentinel. Great to speak to you too, Heather.
Thank you so much.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can always sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks so much for listening.